Well, good morning, everyone. My name is Cathy Findlay. I work with Catherine in government record keeping. My area of responsibility is our digital records strategy, future-proof. And my very pleasant task today is to give you a bit of an overview, not only of the challenge of preserving digital records, but also a bit of a run-through what we at State Records will actually be doing to preserve digital state archives, because as many of you would have seen from our communications, we were successful in securing some necessary funding to do that, and a project is commencing this year for us to build the capacity to accept, preserve and make available digital records in state archives. But I guess what I wanted to do was give you, for those of you who might not be so well versed in the area of digital preservation and the challenges around keeping digital records accessible, I thought it might be useful to kind of go over that ground a little bit and then look at, in particular, what our approach is at State Records and how we will be putting this project together. Another title for this presentation could well be this pithy phrase, which I picked up from Archives New Zealand, who used it in their digital preservation strategy about a year and a half ago: do nothing, lose everything. We must take action now if public sector digital information is to be preserved. Much more so than in the paper environment, and this is what I hope to convey in this presentation, a proactive approach is required if we are to maintain authentic, trusted and available digital information for the future. So as I just mentioned, I guess what I'm wanting to cover here is why worry about the digital preservation of state archives. Why have we been banging on about it for the last 7-8 years or so, when we've been seeking the support to put this project together? What approach are we taking? And also, importantly, how will it affect you? You're working in a public office managing digital information, and what impact, if any, will it have on your day-to-day work? It's just one of those days, isn't it? It's one of those presentations. Okay, so to the first of those questions, why worry about digital preservation? Well, if we take a very black letter of the law view, because the State Records Act says we have to. Section 14 of the Act puts an obligation on all of us to ensure the accessibility of equipment/technology-dependent records. For as long as they are required, and of course, as we know, a small percentage of the full body of records generated by government are required permanently as archives. But alongside that, we simply need to do it because sometimes we use information that's really, really old. That might be an extreme example, but nonetheless, this is really, really old information that was invaluable in deciphering ancient languages. It's the Rosetta Stone, housed in the British Museum, and is still, you know, used and referred to today. But perhaps to look at some examples that are a bit closer to home. This is a listing of convicts on board the Neptune that arrived in Sydney in June 1790. It's a convict indent, so a list of convicts transported to New South Wales on a particular ship. The indents provide date, name, place of trial and sentence. And so in its original life, it was a key record in administering the colony, the penal colony. And of course, as many of you would know, these records are used extensively now for family history research, for research into convict life in New South Wales. These records have been recognised by UNESCO as having world significance and inscribed on the Memory of the World Project Register in 2006. The series of these records covering 1788 to 1842 constitute a unique Resorts, one of the most important penology archives in the world. And here are some other examples, records that we use to imagine the past, to confirm our rights and entitlements, and to do business. I would have included some more of the more sort of serious doing business type records, but they're not as pretty. So these are some of the ones that perhaps are in the enriching and illuminating our memory side of things. But of course, the State Archives hold a lot of very important records for documenting and supporting citizens' rights and entitlements. So how is it that we have the privilege of being able to reference and use this information now? Well, not wanting to denigrate the whole sort of archival endeavour, but basically because we labelled it and put it on a shelf. In the paper world, it's possible to, providing you have appropriate climate control conditions and appropriate descriptive standards and information about what you have, to put records away for many decades, and in European archives, many hundreds of years, and know that they will be there and accessible for you to use down the track. So it's a fairly passive type of preservation, although I again would stress that my colleagues who work in preservation do a lot of very important work in keeping up the physical condition and making sure those records don't deteriorate. Is this going to work for digital government information? Rhetorical question. I'm sure you know that the answer I'm leading up to with that is no. Why is that? And indeed, what sorts of records are we actually talking about when we say, are we going to be able to access and use digital government information? Some examples are records of commissions of inquiry, the Commission of Inquiry into the Thredbo Landslip, the Waterfall and Glenbrook Rail disasters, all digital records. Major infrastructure projects, although our state isn't so good at delivering those at the moment, but digital records of major infrastructure, digital photographs, online annual reports, the list goes on. So, you know, what are the risks to this very important body of records of today? Well, the one that's perhaps most commonly spoken about in digital preservation, in the digital preservation world, is technology obsolescence. So there's an early Mac application, Mac Draw, and an old form of media from the Gallery of Obsolete Formats online. And of course we can think of many, many other defunct software applications and media types on which we have all probably generated and stored digital information. You may well have some of these kicking around in your organisations. Not these specifically, but 5 1/4 inch floppy disks, even 3 inch floppy disks now. So that's one of the key challenges for keeping digital information accessible. The other challenge is proprietary control. The fact that to a great extent, particularly in the government sector, the tools we use, the software applications and operating systems that we use are under commercial arrangements by license with companies who charge us to be able to use their tools and who do not provide us with access to the under the hood, the innermost workings of their tools, puts our information at risk. Essentially, we need to maintain those licenses and maintain those commercial arrangements with those providers in order to be able to continue to read and use the digital information. If it's perhaps not one of the big guys, there's a risk that perhaps that provider might disappear, go out of business. But even where they do persist, there is still this ongoing cost, and sometimes, you know, that can become unsustainable. And the problem of this sort of opaqueness around what is needed to actually read and reproduce our records because they do not share the codes behind their tools. And another risk for digital records that Catherine very beautifully outlined in her survey report is that increasingly digital records are being certainly generated but also then captured and maintained outside of what we would regard as traditional, the traditional records management domain, the file systems, the EDRMS environments that that we know and love. So we've got digital records documenting very important government business being maintained by third-party providers, sometimes in the cloud. And in the case of Nathan Rees's tweets, which we saved from a fate worse than death a couple of years ago, they were in the cloud, and they were also in a system that was really outside of the view of corporate information managers, and that's how digital records can just slip through the net and into the digital black hole that people talk about. So that's where our strategy for protecting and managing digital information comes in, to address this range of risks. And those of you who have been coming to forums and receiving our communications will know that the future-proof strategy really has two main strands. One is about improving the keeping of digital records in current business environments, and the standard is really the key tool with which to achieve that. But the other strand of future-proof has always been about protecting and preserving and making available digital state archives. So I guess as well as, and it's important to really to stress that these two things are very closely interrelated. It's not a sort of over here and over here. They're actually very much dependent on one another, because without good quality records and metadata, word of the day, we won't have good quality digital state archives. So the standard is key. The policy on digital preservation that we issued a couple of years ago is also a very important part of the overall strategy, and I'll get to that in just a minute. Our appraisal and disposal framework and the ability to identify the retention requirements and ultimate disposal actions for digital records is a really critical part of this whole picture as well. Without knowing that something is a state archive, how will it make its way into our repository? And of course, the other very important part is a facility that is capable of accepting and preserving and making available those digital records as state archives that I'll talk about also in just a moment. But as I say, I wanted to quickly run through our policy on digital records preservation. This is really, I suppose, it sort of outlines our philosophy, if you like, our approach, which we developed after a period of research, of looking around at what the other Australasian archives, government archives, were doing, also what was happening internationally. We consulted both in that space and also with public offices, and we issued this policy statement in late 2007. And the principles of it apply both to what we propose to do with digital records, but they apply just as much to someone in a government office, a government organisation, who is seeking to ensure that their digital records remain accessible and authentic. The first principle is saying, look, technological change is a given. Systems change happens. Digital records should be migrated forward as those systems change. And we've heard a lot about the need for careful and planned migration, and we have a number of resources on our website around that, and more coming through this year. The second principle relates to the fact that in the digital world, and this is a key difference with paper records, some change in the look and feel of records will occur when you see records being moved through different operating systems. Sometimes changes can be around formatting, a bit of layout change. If you look at, in fact, converting analog to digital when you're scanning and you're not scanning in colour, then you're moving from a physical colour document to a digital black and white representation of that document. The fact that there is change to look and feel is not a problem in and of itself. What is a problem, however, is if you lose essential meaning in the record as a result of that migration or change. So what we're saying is be aware of what the characteristics are that give a record its meaning and make sure they are protected if you are upgrading into a new system or environment. So a classic example that we use a lot is it's a digital map or plan where, in fact, colour is necessary to understand the meaning of the different segments of the map or plan and should be preserved even if you migrate it into another system. However, a letterhead, probably not actually essential for understanding the meaning of that letter. So certainly that's something that, you know, does require some foresight and is part of that migration planning process. Digital state records must be preserved in context, so preserving in the sense of both initial capture and registration into a record keeping system with point of capture metadata, and then ongoing process metadata to show what's happened with that record over time, and then also metadata to show that, well, that's now been moved to this agency because of administrative change. It's now been disposed of and sent to state archives. All of that important context needs to stay persistently linked with records. They must be secure and tracked throughout the process. This principle goes to the notion in archives of an unbroken chain of custody, so that records don't go off into some mysterious area where possibly, you know, strange things are done to them and then pop up in a different place without having that notion that they've been in official and safe hands throughout their existence. So a sort of, in terms of transfer of state archives, that's a controlled and secure process by which records move out of one organisation environment into another. And importantly, what we're saying with our approach to digital preservation is we need to be flexible. Digital preservation techniques are evolving all the time. We are looking and have looked in terms of our planning at what's the best and most appropriate fit for us now, but we don't know what's around the corner, and there are many preservation techniques with a lot of promise that simply aren't mature yet. So we need to be flexible, and we have at one of the key elements of our approach is preserving everything that comes in bitstream, in ones and zeros, so that we have the most basic building blocks of that record and can apply different preservation techniques to it over time, as well as whatever preservation technique we do now. So what is this project all about? What will we be doing? We've had a plan for how we want to proceed in place for some time as part of the whole process of seeking the funds for it. It was developed, again, by looking around at what other government archives are doing, both in the Commonwealth at the National Archives of Australia and also at Public Record Office Victoria, both of whom have had digital preservation programs established for some years. Archives New Zealand is also now going down that path. They're a little bit ahead of us. So it was fantastic that we had the opportunity to learn both from their successes and things that they would have done differently and really factor that into our planning process. So the project is a 3-year project with the idea that from year 4, state records would be in a position to say we are open for business for anything you care to throw at us. But that during the 3-year development phase, it will be a controlled and a managed building up of our capacity to accept and preserve digital records. We have a 6-person team. Recruitment is just starting now. comprising a project manager, two project archivists, two systems developers, and, actually 1.5 security and hardware specialists. We are basing our approach on the preservation principles that I just ran through, and as I said, adopting the best and most appropriate tools that are available. And another really fantastic thing about the world of digital preservation is that it's an open source environment, by and large. There are a couple of commercial providers, but for example, the National Archives has developed a preservation tool that we've spoken about in this forum before called Xena, X-E-N-A, which stands for XML Electronic Normalising of Archives, but I think they just made that up so they could have a tool called Xena. it's a tool that we recently had another look at and said, well, is that still the tool that is most appropriate for our needs? And it does meet a lot of our requirements. It basically takes a collection of digital records, it identifies the formats within the collection, and it offers a migration path for each record to what is called an open form, an open standard version of that format. So, for example, for a Word document, Xena will say, that's a Word document version, blah de blah, and we recommend converting this to open document format. Now, that is getting to that issue of proprietary control and taking the records out of proprietary held formats and into formats that we understand the code, we have access to the published codes, and which are able to be read and understood in a range of environments. And so it does that for a range of different formats, including office type formats and also things like audio recordings. And, but you know, it's a tool that is being developed. National Archives are constantly working on developing and enhancing it for more and more formats, and we hope to then engage with them and other developers to actually build up an even greater suite of functionalities for Xena and formats that it can cope with. And there are other tools. There's a preservation planning tool which helps you to work out the best solution for a given set of records and helps test different migration paths called Plato, that was developed through a European Commission project in Vienna. And there are new tools coming out all the time. In fact, if you go online and go into the wonderful world of digital preservation, you'll see myriad projects and all of them with acronyms and, you know, with funny names. I think because that comes from the technology world, it's sort of people like to have funny names like Xena and Droid and a lot of science fiction names. Maybe it's because it's software developers that are working on these things. So the other important thing that we want to make sure we do with this project and get it right is integrate what we're doing with the transfer and processing and access provision of archives. We want to make it integrated with our paper processes. We don't want a sort of siloed, separate digital, you know, repository sitting over here which bears no relationship to the way we manage our paper-based archives. And indeed, we would fully expect to eventually be receiving mixed transfers of paper-based and digital content from an agency. And we need to be able to cope with that, and it all needs to be managed and described under our archival control system in context, and taking advantage of that incredibly rich resource that is in the series system. And so, as I kind of said before, what we're looking at is a very staged approach with pilot transfers through the 3-year duration of the project, working with agencies. We've already had some approaches from agencies, which is fantastic, and we need to sort of obviously go away and think about getting a range of pilot transfers that really reflects the variety of types of records, types of organisations that we will be dealing with. It won't be any good for us just to take 3 transfers of commissions of inquiry that are all PDFs and then say, right, we're ready to go. We need to actually look at all the different types of records that we might be dealing with and scenarios. So What does this mean for you, or what can you do? You're an essential partner in the building of a digital state archives. And so I would encourage everyone, well, you know, you've already heard plenty this morning about keeping records, digital records, in conformance with the standard. But as I said, that's getting that basic metadata and that those robust digital records right from the start is really, really important. And knowing which of your records you can get rid of early and which are actually valuable for long-term retention. Migration, again, been talked about a lot this morning. Persistent linkage of metadata. What we haven't talked much about is, you know, in your own environment where you are retaining records for business purposes but over quite long periods of time, consider migrating them to open formats to really protect them against some of the issues around proprietary formats and technology change. So for text-based stuff, ODF and PDFA are good options. Oh, and a little tip, little thing that we like to remind people about is the risks of removable media. I think everyone has encountered that situation where somebody might be leaving their office or retiring, and then they come to you with some discs and say, oh, these might have important things on them, here you go, and you don't have any way of reading them. And there's really very few options available to you to deal with that if there's nothing on the actual disc to label what it is and you have no way of actually accessing and reading it, short of going to an expensive forensic digital recovery service. So our advice is official digital records of your agency should be retained in online systems. You might have tiered storage where not everything is immediately accessible, but that way it's under corporate control, backed up, protected from disaster, and visible. It's not on a shelf, on a disk or a flash drive at risk. So that's really all I wanted to do to run through our approach, where we're going. I would just say again, don't send us any digital records yet. We're you know, at the very beginning stages, but we do intend to have a very regular series of blog posts about how the project is going on the Futureproof blog. We're on Twitter, and we will be speaking at these forums and letting people know what's happening through the For the Record e-newsletter as well. Are there any questions about that? Okay, so I think it's morning tea. It's morning tea. Ready, Mandy? Yep, thumbs up. So I think we're taking about half an hour. So that's just after 11. We'll be reconvening for the rest of the morning session. Thanks.